Welcome back to Cognac and Conspiracies. I'm Taylor.
And I'm Jade.
All right. And we are back for another week, but it's a special week because it's Jade's birthday.
See, I knew you were going to say that. And part
of you don't
was,
want me to say it?
No, it's fine. But part of me was like, oh, she can't say that because, you know, that's personal information. And people are going to be able to Google me. But I was like, no, it's fine. People don't know how old I am. So if they had the year, it'd be worse. But yay. Thanks, Taylor. It's a special birthday episode.
It's a special birthday episode. And if it's short and sweet, it's going to be short and sweet, y'all, because we're about to be on our way to dinner. So...
Birthday.
I tried to pick something short, sweet, to the point, and all that good stuff. So let's get into it. I am going to talk about the disappearance of a young boy by the name of Jaleek Rainwalker. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
It's giving Relisha Rudd.
No, but like somewhere else, like not in this area?
Yeah, no, not in this area. But it's just, you know, the goddamn thunderstorming. Like, sorry if y'all can hear that, but I'm not cutting it out. It's just like the disappearance of a young child, and actually, it's giving. Never mind. I'll get into it, and we'll talk about that.
Were you about to say JonBenet Ramsey?
No, I was gonna say something else. Like I said, we'll get into that later about what this reminds me of. Okay. But let me just tell y'all, because they're gonna be like, "Bitch, how you gonna tell us what it's giving you and tell us what it's about?" Y'all right? So. Jaleek Rainwalker was a 13-year-old boy. He grew up in the city of Greenwich, New York, and he actually was born to a mother who was addicted to drugs. She was addicted to drugs when he was born, and as a result, he was born addicted to drugs. He got removed from his mother's care. He was born in 1995, August 2nd, 1995. He got removed from his mother's care and then placed into foster care due to the fact that she was an unfit mother. And by the time he was like 7 years old, he had been in like 5 different foster care houses. So he was just basically in and out of the system. I saw a source that said he was actually sexually molested when he was an infant. Like, so this is like a child who has had like a really hard life. Basically didn't really have a fighting chance. His life was not a good life. So around the year of 2007, he was adopted into a like stable home. He was, like I said, he was bounced around before that. He went to foster care with a man named Stephen Burrell Kerr and his wife, Jocelyn McDonald. And they fostered him. And then they actually decided to adopt him. Mm-hmm. And... from that point on, it was kind of like they had a rocky relationship, him and his adopted parents. By the time he was 12, 13 years old, even before that, they said he had suicidal and homicidal tendencies.
At what age?
I know for sure by the time he was 12 or 13, but I read sources that say as young as 10 years old, he was having like suicidal and homicidal. Like, not that he ever tried to kill anybody or tried to kill himself, but the way that he would act out, the things that he would do.
That's crazy. They, mm-hmm. And I do wonder, I know that, like, normally, like, seven kids are born with that addiction because their mother was, like, doing drugs when they were in the womb. I wonder if he ever got, like, proper treatment for that. Like, I know that, like, sometimes when the kids are in the hospital, they give them, like, small doses and stuff like that. But I wonder if, like, hearing about a situation, if he ever got the proper care to ever really, like, get off those drugs. So I know that, like... in an adult, it, like, permanently changes, like, your brain chemistry. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, like, what it does to a child.
I'm sure it does permanently. I'm sure it did permanently change his brain chemistry, especially in the womb.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying
that's like you're literally developing. Mm-hmm. And you have crack cocaine in your system. And you're born and you're screaming, crying, acting a fool, basically, because you don't have no crack. Or you don't have no cocaine. Or you don't have no weed. You don't have alcohol. You know, his mother wasn't a good mother. So I'm sure there was a myriad of things that she was doing while she was pregnant that she shouldn't have been doing. So when a baby is born with that addiction, I'm sure it does change their brain chemistry and their developmental trajectory. Like, forever. I don't think you can undo it.
I think forever. And yeah. I know that, like, I don't know how anything works because I'm not a doctor. or anything, for that matter. But I feel like people say, like, when you do too many drugs, like, your body... basically, when you do drugs, some drugs, I feel like, what is it? Your body releases... it forces your body to release a bunch of endorphins. And same for, like, social media people. Mm-hmm. Like, that dopamine.
Bro, I'm hip.
Where your body releases dopamine, like, when you get likes and shit. And I wonder if, like, how do I say it? Your body stops producing them correctly when you kind of get on this model. And I wonder if you're addicted to drugs, like, as a baby, that your body never, like, develops the correct response to release dopamine. Because that could, like, obviously cause depression. And this is all, like, a theory I made up in the last, like, 30 seconds. So, mind you, with no medical... I'm just curious, like, you know.
No, but I feel like that's a thing because, you know what people have been talking about that with? Melatonin. You know that running joke where people give their kids melatonin, their babies? You never seen this, like, on social media and stuff like that? Oh, yeah,
that's a problem?
People, I don't know that it's a problem. I don't have kids. Shit. I gave my dog melatonin before. I ain't do shit. But I'm saying, I don't have kids, but people have brought to the forefront what I never thought about. And they were like, y'all are giving basically, like, infants, I guess, mood-altering things, and y'all don't know 5 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road what that melatonin, because that's naturally producing your brain.
Yeah.
So if you're amping it up and the baby's like a year and a half,
it'll stop producing.
You don't know the long-term effects that you giving that little melatonin gummy so that you can sleep in the night, which, bitch, babies don't sleep, so you should have expected that, but you want to give your baby melatonin so that you can go to sleep. You don't know the long-term effects of that.
That's so crazy. So I knew that people were giving their kids, like, three and up, like, toddlers melatonin, but I didn't know it was a thing to give, like, a baby melatonin.
No, I saw it. I don't think, I mean, it is a thing, but it's controversial, which is why I feel like I saw that.
Oh, it's all controversial. Yeah. People used to give their kids, like, Benadryl. Like, people used to give their kids, like, doses of Benadryl to go on flights and stuff. Yeah, like, but I feel like melatonin is a new thing. But before that, people would give their kids, like a sip of Benadryl to put them to sleep on the flight.
That'd be all right.
I'm just saying, it's kind of the same shit. If you're, like, not recreationally, but you're putting your kid to sleep with, like, Benadryl, I don't think it's any better.
That's true. But, like you said, all this to say, his melatonin, his dopamine, his everything was probably permanently altered due to the fact that his mother was on drugs and he was born addicted to drugs. So he was put into the foster care system, bounced around, and finally landed with his family, Stephen Kerr and his wife, Jocelyn McDonald. And they kept him for a few years, and then they decided they were going to move from the fostering point to adopting him. And I feel like everything kind of went downhill from there. So once he was adopted, or I'm sure they saw little glimpses of this prior to the adoption, but once he was adopted, they reported that he, like I said, was having homicidal tendencies. They had four other children. They said that he was violent with the other children, violent with the parents. They were basically afraid of this boy in their house, afraid for their lives and afraid from their children's lives, because he was that volatile and that violent within the household.
This is so unfortunate, though, because a part of me wonders, like, if they ever, I mean, you'll probably get to, if they ever took the kid to a medical professional, because I know that sometimes, like, mental illness and things like that can show like that, like, just being, like, erratic and, like, not knowing how to, like, push the energy out. I don't know.
Well, they say, was able to find that he was not on any medication nor in any, like, therapy for the mental illness issues. But his foster mom, or his adopted mom, sorry, she adopted him, said that the reason for that was that they live in a small town. It was really hard for them to find, like, mental health, like, support. I don't know. So, basically, they said that it was really hard for them to find any type of support for him or any type of help because of the kind of small town. And they were just, she was like, yeah, he wasn't on medication or subscribing to any of this, but it was because it was very hard for us to, I don't know, find someone to deal with him.
I don't want to, like, a part of me actually does understand it a little bit, because I feel like I'm not super old, even though it's my birthday, but in the lot of years I've lived, I feel like the mental illness really became a household word. Like, I didn't even know what mental illness or mental health really meant until probably, like, my sophomore year in college, I want to say. So I feel like the idea of, like, if your kid has these behavioral issues, like I said, if you live in a small time, like, I do understand you might not be able to find, like, the someone.
Support.
Yeah, so the support and someone, like, readily. And also, I feel like in that time in the 90s, I don't even know if you know how to describe it. Like, now I feel like I would know how to describe it to a doctor. But in the moment, like, in the 90s, I didn't know what depression, anxiety, like, bipolar, like, none of that was.
So well,
like,
this was 2007, so.
I didn't know 2007 as a... Oh, okay. Yeah, I would have known. I would not have been able to know, absolutely.
Okay, well, I would give them that, but there was reports, and this is a proven fact, that because Jalik was so, I guess, volatile, they actually tried to, quote, reverse the adoption. Like, they tried to give him back. That's not a thing. You can't just give a child back.
People do.
I mean,
there was a YouTube couple that gave their kid back.
I heard about that. My girlfriend told me about that. Because I feel like this is not the first time we talked about, like, children in foster care and things like that ending up in bad situations. But you can't, I guess,
you cannot give children back, because if you give a child back, in my opinion, it means you never thought of them as a family member. I saw, like, a TikTok today where this guy who had been adopted, I'm not adopted, so again, if you're adopted, please chime in. But he basically was saying that he thought that adoption was unfair because when you get, like, in a marriage contract, like, so you sign documents when you're married, you're allowed to divorce. He was like, when you're adopted into a family, you might be adopted when you're three. There's no type of, I guess he was saying, process to go through to leave your adopted family. Because he was saying, like, at 15, they stopped contributing to him. So, obviously, a 15-year-old, right? Mm-hmm. If your adopted parents have some crap, you probably would like to go remove yourself from them, and you still have time to go get a family who will take you through college, support you, not even, like, financially. Like, you still just want that support as an adolescent. Yeah. And he was like, he basically, because you can't get out of that, you just stuck there. And same for, like, I feel like for this young man, like, I feel like he literally, like, how do I say it? Like, they live in a small town, can't find him resources, but there is no real out. Like,
yeah, there's not. And that's basically what they told them when they went to the courts. Around 2006, early 2007, the courts trying to basically give him back. And they were like, hey, that's not how that works. The process for, you know, giving him up for adoption would essentially be the same as, like, if you wanted to give your biological child up for adoption, because that's what you did. When you adopted this child, they became your biological child.
Yeah, that's so how it works.
It's like if you're a biological mother, when you were, like, 12, were like, oh, you know, Jade's acting out. She keeps sneaking out to see boys. I want to put her up for adoption.
Yeah, you can't do
that. It's the same. I mean, you can, but it's, like, a whole thing. You know, like, that's your biological child. What do you mean? They're, like, 12, 13 years old. What are you doing? But I will say that that's not that it's not uncommon, but it's not unheard of. No, girl.
Wait. It's not unheard of to give up your biological children, like, later in life?
People do that. Or at the very least, threaten their children with it. Because, girl, I did, like, a mentorship program, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. And the girl's mom, you know, the whole reason she was in the program was because she was bad as hell. Okay, got you. But the mom would call me, and the mom had called her a bitch in front of me before. A fast ass bitch, to be specific, and said that she's gonna call her and tell her if she doesn't get her shit together, she's gonna put her up for adoption. Now, I know normal people with normal parents are like, what the fuck? But that's a thing. Like, people with not so good parents, they really be doing that shit. So I feel like it's a thing. They really will threaten their kids or go to the courts and be like, I don't want this child anymore.
Mm-hmm. I have so many feelings about that.
I thought it was wrong. So I was like, well, let's not say that to her. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it was just a mentorship program. So I was like, at the end of the day, this is beyond my expertise. I'm just trying to take the girl to play golf or whatever the fuck. And read her college essays. But I will say that experience helped me learn, like, everybody's parents are not what you think they are. Like, yeah. So yeah, her mom was wild. So it's like, when I heard that about his parents, I was like, I believe it. Like, you get a child, you try to give it back. I believe that. That's the thing.
People legit try to give kids back.
Because people try to give their biological kids back.
I did not know people try to get their biological kids back. Yeah. That's a whole...
When you hit them teenage years, you start rebelling, you start acting the fool. Most normal people with normal, like, reasoning skills are like, okay, my child is acting out, they're a teenager, they're going through puberty, whatever, they're pissing me off, whatever. But some crazy people will literally be like, okay, you 16, you grown, get the fuck out of my house. You 15, get the fuck out of my house.
It's crazy because, like, in the United States, I don't think that there's any law that makes you obligated to actually raise your children.
No.
Like, I think that, like, the mother or the father can sue the other parent for, like, child support. But I don't think that, I mean, quote me if I'm wrong, I don't know if a child can actually say, like, hey, I'm 14 or I'm 11 and my parents have never taken care of me, and, like, force them to, like, feed them, take care of them, and, like, provide for them. Like, I don't think that there's, like, a legal path to force your parent to take care of
them. Well, you would have... Well, they would go to prison for neglect. You would have to report them to, like, Child Protective Services. Mm-hmm. and they probably would get a neglect charge or something like that.
But then you did that at like 11, now you don't have parents.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like a lose-lose.
Yeah, it's a lose-lose situation. It's a lose-lose situation because if you do that, you're going to be in the foster care system. If you don't do it, you're going to have parents. And then if your parents want to, in theory, you could be 11, 12. There's no statute of limitation. You could be 15 years old, 16 years old, and your parents could be like, cool, putting her up for adoption or putting him up for adoption. Obviously, you're not going to be adopted. You're going to spend those last 2 years in the foster care system. But they can do that if they want to. So they tried to give him back. And they were like, hey, that's not a thing. And apparently, there is this thing within the foster care system called respite care. And basically, what that is when... It's like when a foster family or an adopted family can't keep the child for a short period of time, or even if, I guess, there has to be clearances and things like that, if they're not adopted yet, for that child to go out of the country with you or to travel with you, if you're not able to get your clearance, then a respite family will come in, basically a babysitter, it's not a bad thing, will come in and say, okay, Jaleek can stay with me for 4 days while you're in wherever you are, and we'll take care of him. A babysitter, like an approved babysitter through the foster care.
Interesting.
So, the adoptive father was due to go to, I think they said Romania. This is kind of fuzzy here. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to send Jaleek to the home of Elaine and Tom Persons. So those were the respite family. And so they wanted to keep him. He wanted them to keep him for almost 2 weeks because his wife was not comfortable with Jaleek being in the home while he wasn't there, because she felt as if she wasn't going to be able to manage the situation. If he had an outburst, she wasn't going to be able to manage it or him. And that's, you know, so she didn't want to be basically in, she didn't feel comfortable being in the home with him when her husband was not there. Mm-hmm. So they asked them to keep him for 2 weeks. They said they can't keep him for 2 weeks, but they did keep him, I think, for 6 days. And they did say that while they had Jaleek, they kept him until November 1st. So during that time was like the end of October to the beginning of November. They said that he was basically like a perfect angel. Like he was great. He hung out with their other children, played video games. Like I said, it was the end of October. They Halloween. They went to a haunted house. They did just regular shit. And they were like, yeah, we couldn't ask for a better, you know, respite child. Like, he was cool. Everything was fine.
That's suspicious.
I mean, I would have thought that suspicious, but when I had looked into it and listened to other podcasts and things like that, they were like, it's not unusual, and I believe this, for like a child to act totally different. Like,
oh, kids do.
They do.
But so, I think that, like, if
he wasn't comfortable.
I mean, how do I say it? Like, I don't... It's just interesting to me because the way they describe him as a kid who almost has no control over his, like I said, if you, people are struggling with some mental illness, sometimes, like frustration can come out physically, or you don't know how to, like, handle emotion, so it comes out physically of, like, beating people or whatever, and it seemed like that's how they were describing him. Mm-hmm. So to hear that, like, he had this excellent time over there... It's just, I could have, like, if you're fighting a mental illness, you can't turn it on and off. So it's just interesting. They said they have, like, a great time with him.
Yeah, maybe not. But there, as much as there is for them to say, oh, he was great, his former foster parents, before he got adopted, said that he did have those violent outbursts and things like that.
Oh, so they did confirm that.
Because
okay.
He was with a different foster family for about 4 years before he was with his permanent adopted family. And the foster family did say he had those behavioral issues. And they almost adopted him. And the reason they did not adopt him was because of those behavioral issues and those outbursts. So I'm not doubting that he had him. You know, it's just interesting.
That's unfortunate.
That I mean, literally it's this.
I know, it's just sad. I mean,
it's sad. But like I said, I wanted to touch on that because I feel like most people are like, oh, well, why was he? They're lying on him. He didn't have those outbursts. He didn't this. He did that. I'm like, well, you know, slow your roll. You know, he was only there for about 5 days, six days. He probably wasn't comfortable.
Yeah,
that's probably why he was on his best behavior. So after those days, on November 1st, Jaleek's adopted father came to pick him up from the respite stay. And there wasn't really a reason why he did this, but he said on his way home, they weren't that far from each other. And they said on the way home, Steve Kerr, which was his adopted father, Jocelyn was not there. Steve Kerr stopped at his parents' house. So his, I'm like, this gets
his grandparents?
Yes. Jalik's paternal grandparents.
Yeah, his adopted house, paternal grandparents.
Which
yeah.
their house is 10 minutes away from their home.
Mm-hmm.
So he stopped at their home and him and Jalik spent the night there together.
Interesting.
No reason behind this. He never said why he did this. And the thing is, some people had started to say, oh, well, maybe he was taking Jalik to see his grandparents. The grandparents, grandparents weren't there. They're out of town.
That is...
Why would you go to a house that's 10 minutes away from your house as opposed to going to your house? Because if they were there, he could have easily... So I would have understood, hey, that? I wanted Jalik to see his grandparents. But nobody was there but them too. So
that's weird. So I feel like you're going to say it, but I wonder what his explanation like for that is.
There is none. Oh. There really is none. He just said he just decided to stop at his parents' house and they just decided to sleep there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is, you know, where he was last seen. He spent the night there with his father, with his adopted father.
Hold up.
I'm Stephen Kerr. What do you mean?
Hold up. If the little boy was last seen there, mm-hmm. was the father ever seen again?
Yeah. The father's all over the
case
place.
Case closed.
The father's all over the place.
Case closed.
Okay, so basically on the night... I'm dead. Not you writing a nigga off. Don't do him. He said he ain't do it, okay?
Where'd he
go? I know what it's looking
like. Where'd he go?
He said he don't know. I know what it's looking like. He doesn't know, Jade. I'm about to tell you what it's looking like, okay?
Please tell me.
So
let me know. Let me know.
So it's about the father. I'm dead. Stephen Kerr. Okay. So on the night of November 1st, 2007, Jalik disappears. And the story from his adoptive father is that he woke up the next morning, which would have been November 2nd, at about 7:30 a.m. And he, at 7:30 a.m. was when he actually found out that Jalik was not there anymore. But he actually woke up a little bit previously to that. He didn't say the exact time, maybe given 5 or 6, right, to check on his children. Like I said, he went to go check on his kids. Jalik was still asleep. He said he went back to sleep. And at 7:30 a.m., he came back. And Jalik was not there. Basically, the bed... not you. Look, let me finish. He was not there.
Mm-hmm.
He did say that it looked like there had been, like, somebody had tried to bunch the covers and, like, put some pillows under it. It's giving Ferris Bueller. And, like, oh, I'm going to put pillows under the comforter so that it looks like I'm still here. That type of thing. And they actually said that he found a note from Jalik that he had left behind. And this note said...
Tell me about it. Tell me about the note.
This note said, "Dear everybody, I'm sorry for everything. I won't be a bother anymore. Goodbye, Jalik." Now, that's what he said the note said. I want to highlight this. He says that he realized at 7:30 that his son was missing. And at 8:57 a.m., so about 9 o'clock, about an hour and a half later, is when he actually reported his son missing.
I bet he did.
Mm-hmm. So it took him almost an hour and a half to call the police.
Because I know why. I know why.
To call the police to tell them that his son was missing.
I know.
And when he was questioned about this, once again, there wasn't really any explanation. I think that I saw a bunch of sources that it varied. Like, there's no proven, you know, idea of, like, what he did during this time because it was just him in the house or whatever. But at one point, he said he took a shower. At one point, he said
he took a shower.
Girl, he said he took a shower. I'm like, imagine waking up and...
Even if my cat was gone.
Girl,
if I wake up, I can't find my cat... I'm gonna take a damn shower.
I'm panicking.
That's so wild.
Yeah.
Why? It's not wild because I know what happened. I'm gonna tell you what I think. But I'm gonna tell you what I think happened when you're done.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Like you said, even an animal, if I woke up and one of my dogs was missing, I would be panicking. I'd be calling animal control. I would Thank be like, you. Oh my God, let me go to the library. I gotta print his picture. I gotta put a flyer. I gotta do something. I'm not gonna be like, damn, Max ain't here. Let me go soap myself up real quick. Let me put on some fresh clothes before I deal with this. Like, who does that? That's weird. But he swears that he was at home, and there's really no explanation for this. They've asked him, why did you wait an hour and a half to call the police? There really is no, there's no concrete explanation. There's nothing to explain that.
I'll tell you. Did they ever, what is it called? You know, like, when they check the handwriting on notes, like, a lot of people...
Yeah, so Jalik did write the note.
He did write the note?
He did write that note. But there's an explanation for that as well. So, his grandparents actually said that this was a note. It actually came out or was suggested that this was a note that he actually had to write in school. He was homeschooled. Because to apologize to a... I guess a classmate, because like I said, he was having these behavioral issues and he had actually threatened to sexually assault and like threatened another child in his class.
This is a story of complacency. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. If my like at 2007, if he was born in 1995, he'll be a sixth grader, right? In 2017, I'm assuming he'd be a sixth grader. Mm-hmm. And if my sixth grader told someone that they were going to sexually assault them, it is time to get them some help. If you have to drive an hour and a half to get your child some help, that's what you have to do. I'm sorry. I feel like people never thought of that kid as a family member.
No.
They're not. I'm serious. Like, even my cat, if they're like, your cat has a tumor like on his butt and I have to drive, I got to fly my cat out. I'm going to fly my cat out. Like, that's crazy. That's absolutely insane.
So
that's insane. Just stick him back home and punish him? Put a ground him for that? He needs help. That's insane.
Girl, speaking of grounding, okay. Once it came out that, like, you know, all of this stuff's happening, it's getting like more heat on this family because, like you said, stuff just kind of wasn't adding up.
It's not
like,
adding
it's
up.
It's like that's what the fuck is going on? So there were multiple reports by grandparents, by neighbors, and things like that there was abuse going on in the home. Surprise, surprise. They said that they would do things. First off, the house that they lived in was basically like barely a house. They didn't even have a bathroom in the house. They didn't have constant electricity. They kind of had this generator that they would run every once in a while. Like, I guess if they actually like really needed the generator, they would run it. But other than that, there was no working electricity. If they had to use the bathroom, they would go out. They would have to go to the outhouse. This is 2007. This isn't fucking 1965. This is ridiculous. Right? So the first thought was, how did you adopt this child out to this family? But apparently they lived in a different house when Jalik was adopted, and then once the adoption was finalized, they moved out into like the fucking random middle of nowhere. So, and there's no follow-ups. I've never adopted a child. I've never fostered.
I thought there were follow-ups, like
if you're a foster. But once you're adopted, apparently that is your child. There's not, nobody comes back 2 years later, 5 years later, 10 years later, and says, hey, how's it going? Like, that is your adoptive child. I assume that they did all that during the foster process, checked up on you, made sure everything was cool. But once the child is adopted, then they're adopted. And that's just period. That's your child. And they don't really follow up too much after that. So after they adopted him, they moved basically to like fucking shantytown and to a house with no electricity and no toilet.
Yeah. Today I have learned that we need to work on our adoption system in the United States, besides other things. But so what was their motive? Like, why would you just set out to scam an adoption agency and just grab a child just for the hell of it?
I don't know.
Like, why would you just, for like shits and giggles, like why would you even do that?
I don't know.
Like, what type of person puts on a whole fraud? This sounds like a Disney movie or something. Like, no, I'm serious, like, why would you do that? Like, what person in their right mind would go adopt a child? Like, what?
I don't know. I literally don't know. Like, that's still to be determined. I know people foster children
for a check. Yeah.
But once you adopt a child, you don't get a check.
You don't get a check.
So it's like, if he was still a foster child, I'd be like, oh, I get it. They are wanting to make money, and I guess maybe they bit off more than they could chew with this child who had behavioral issues and developmental issues, and they decided to get rid of him. But you adopted him when you didn't have to. I don't get that. But you know what this reminds me of, which I was going to mention in the beginning? It's giving you... Did you hear about that lesbian couple who had adopted, like, all those kids? It was, like, fucking 8 kids. And the boy who was, like, free hugs at, like, the Ferguson rally.
No, I don't think I've heard this.
Girl, it was crazy. So, this boy went... Long story short, this little boy went viral because he was at one of, like, the Black Lives Matter rallies. I think it was Ferguson. And he had a sign up that said free hugs. And the little black boy was crying and, like, hugging a police officer. Propaganda. Right? So, people were like, oh, like, this is this little boy. It's such a cute picture. You can feel how you want about the picture. Him hugging a police officer or whatever. But he was there. He was an adoptive child, and he had two moms. His moms were two white lesbians. Why did a lady drive them all off a cliff in, like, a murder-suicide type shit? All her kids. And she had adopted all these black kids and then drove them off a cliff. Girl.
Excuse me?
Let me find the boy's name. It's a thing. And I don't know why white people collect the Hart children. If y'all want to Google it, just look up the Hart children. The mom's names are Jennifer and Sarah.
They were all black?
Mostly black. And then there was a few, like, little brown kids mixed in there.
Why did they do that?
I don't know. But
she drove them off. That's a whole other episode.
I'm going to say, that's that was almost my episode. And then at the last minute, I switched to him. Maybe next week, maybe you can do it, or if you don't do it, I'll do it. But yeah, the Hart children, if you're interested, there's a whole podcast and, like, a series podcast about it. But this is what it's giving. Like, I don't know why white people sometimes go out and adopt black kids, brown kids, and then turn around and mistreat them. I don't know what the psychology is behind it, but it's not the first time that it has happened. And I'm sure it won't be the last. I'm like, what do you want to look like, a savior, but like a white savior, but then you don't really want to do the work? Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. But it's not the first time, and I'm sure it won't be the last. So, where we were. Back to, like, the idea of, like, the punishment and the things of that. Apparently, there was a lot of abuse going on in the home. When Jalik would, you know, do something they didn't like, some of the punishments they say that they would implement where they wouldn't allow him to use the outhouse, wouldn't allow him to use the bathroom. So basically, him and the other children would either have to go out into the woods and do it, or he would, you know, hold it until maybe they ran errands or, you know, did something like that. They said if they cursed or said something that they did not like, they would have to wash their mouth out with soap, which I will say, I've heard of this before. I still think it's foul, but I've heard that before. And they basically would up the time. Like, basically, if you said a curse word one time, you would have to wash your mouth out for 15 seconds. And then if you did it again, you up to 30 seconds. And then you up to a minute and things like that. Yeah. So, it was... There was also a neighbor that said that he overheard the father saying that they would have time together where they would all be naked. So, if you remember from earlier in the episode, was already previously abused.
Okay. See, so that's why I was like, okay, so that's why I was like, that's some shit. Because the thing is, like, it's so fucking depressing that this little boy was already, like, molested when he was, like, an infant or a baby, whatever. But the fact that the minute you said, oh, he told a classmate, like, threatened he would sexually assault them. See, you don't just, like, get that through osmosis. Mm-hmm. Unless someone sex assaulting you or you see that paper and you know that that's how people, like, are attempting to gain power. He basically probably was just...
projecting.
Yeah, what had happened to him. Mm-hmm. And that literally, like I said, that was like a flag in my head. And I was like, where the hell does a kid even get that shit? Like, someone said it to him. Yeah. So he said it to them. Like,
I'm sure. So the dad says that, of course, said that he doesn't know anything about that. The naked time, he don't know nothing about that. But it's like, why would somebody lie about that? And then one of his older adopted sisters, which was one of their biological children, did tell police that once upon a time, one time, that the adoptive father had actually held his head underwater as a form of punishment. Jalik's head underwater. And they didn't say what this was for. It doesn't really matter. But they said as a form of punishment, he held his head underwater. Yeah, I guess until he couldn't breathe or like something like that. And I don't know why a child... This is from a child in the home. Mm-hmm. She said this. Mm-hmm. I don't know why she would make that up.
She wouldn't make that
up. Anything like that. And when they asked him about that, this was after Jalik's disappearance. And he basically said that he didn't confirm it or deny it. He basically said, in a nutshell, he doesn't know why we're talking about things from the past. And, you know, things that I may or may not have done.
Whoa!
You know,
why are we talking about this? He's not in jail?
No, he's not in jail.
See,
he didn't admit to it. He just said, why are we talking about this?
Like, that's an admission. That's not,
you know, really the conversation we need to be having.
See, now you got me upset.
Talking about my son. See? And it's just like, sir, if somebody ever accused me of holding a child's head underwater, I would be able to say with certainty, I never ever did that ever in my life. Nor would I ever. So the fact that he's just like, why are we talking about this? You know, I don't really think that's important. I would be extremely offended if somebody accused me of holding a child's head underwater, because that's very wild. Like, and your daughter said that. His daughter said that she witnessed that within the household. So there was a lot of things going on within this household at the time that people didn't know about. But like I said, they were off the grid at this time. They left whatever house they were at, went off into this like weird shack, and who was gonna notice it? He was homeschooled, you know. And this incident with like one of the children, this was, I guess, one, you know, even though you're homeschooled, you still have times where like you interact with other children and do activities and things like that. So that's how that had happened. But he was homeschooled. Jalik was. So there wasn't really anybody else to report them, which I feel like was on purpose.
And then a follow-up question. Did they try? How did they try? Like, basically, do you know how they acted after he went missing? Like, obviously, you called the police an hour later.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I do. Did they try to find the boy? Like, did
they
make
it? At the vigil, his dad was there selling eggs.
Who?
His father, his adopted father.
Bro, lock him up. I'm gonna just, when you're done, let me get to my theory. Lock his ass up. You gotta be kidding me. You gotta be kidding me, bro.
I'm joking.
Oh my god, you have gotta be shitting me.
The thing was there with a basket of eggs.
Dude, like, fuck you. What's his name, bro? Say it again. Fuck him. Like,
bruh, I'm dead.
What?
Come on. Let me pull his name.
What's his name? Steven? Stephen Kerr?
Fuck him. Steven or Stephen Kerr.
Bro, fuck you, bro.
He was there at the vigil, like, when people were, you know how people light the candles? Like, oh, we hope, you know, no. Julie comes back. Nigga was there, like, 25 cents for eggs or whatever.
What?
The fuck. Yeah, I don't know.
Did he have chickens or some shit?
Like, I don't know if they, I mean, they probably did. They were off the grid. But what the fuck does that have to do with your son possibly being disappeared and murdered? Like, why are you bringing eggs?
What's trying to, like, make?
I don't know. I know what you're gonna say. Maybe it was like a fundraiser. It wasn't.
No, I thought he was trying to just like flip his eggs or some shit.
Well, yeah, basically. Because people, I feel like people's first reaction is like, you know, oh, maybe he's trying to raise money for... No, there's literally nothing to imply that that was the case. The nigga was just there selling eggs. And when he talked about, like, when he talked at the vigil, they said he didn't really talk about Jalik. Like, he just kind of, he made this weird speech about, like, Martin Luther King and, like, just weird stuff. Like, he was just being mad.
Martin Luther King, what do you got to do with this?
Girl, who knows? Okay, so they asked him, and he basically was like, oh, he's one of my heroes. And, like, if you can't lean on your heroes in times of distress, then who can you lean on?
You know,
like,
what?
What the fuck
and
are
we
you
also,
talking about?
I don't know. So another Martin Luther King episode, but come on now.
The whole thing was bizarre. It was weird. So, what you're asking how they acted quite strange. Same thing with the mother. And the mother actually talked to like a news station and said that like during this time they brought them in for questioning. They cooperated briefly. And during this time, he actually walked out. The father actually walked out on a polygraph test, and the mother stayed for a polygraph test, but they never released the, I guess, contents of her polygraph test. But the father was basically advised by his lawyer to like not deal with the police, which I understand. I won't say that it makes somebody guilty, because even if I was not guilty, I'm not talking to police, because I watched too much true crime and y'all not gonna flip this shit on me to make it seem like I did something I didn't do. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, it's like, I don't know. No. It's like, it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't.
It's not a damned if you don't.
Why? If you talk to the police and take the polygraph?
Yeah, because I didn't kill my fucking kid.
But the polygraph is not, you can't even admit that to court. Like, it's not, what do you mean? It's not trustworthy. So who's to say? I could just be nervous. The polygraph is so flighty. So I look bad for not.
But why are you nervous?
Because I'm in police questioning.
I don't know.
What? I would be nervous.
The thing is, it's like, well, okay, so like,
I'm not defending. I think you did that shit, but.
No, I'm saying, until people find the bones of my kid. Like I said, the same thing, like, we always, sorry, talk about my sister goes missing, because I like, we talk about, she's a hypothetical we talk about a lot. But if my sister, like, dead ass, like, goes missing, like, my concern is finding her. Mm-hmm. So until we find the bones of her, if y'all are, like, you're the close person he talks to, she was, like, if she was dead ass, like, last seen in my house, like, she has keys to my house. I'm like, she has keys to my house. She can leave and come as she goes. But if they're, like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, you then went to the gym. I would be like, no, this is legit what happened. Like, I would know. And I feel like I would know until they find the bones. Like, I would just walk in to find my sister. Like, I think I wouldn't have an issue doing it. That's just me. Because I would know they couldn't convict me. I would know they couldn't. Because I guess, like, in 2021, like, I'm confident that they would find the evidence. Like, they would find footprints or something, or the door would be cracked. They'd be like, oh, she dropped her lip gloss in the backyard. Like, they, you know what I mean? Like, I would just be confident that they would find more evidence. I guess I do this podcast, too. I would feel like in a few days, like, more will come. I would do it.
I didn't say I wouldn't do it. I think I would do it if it was like my loved one, like if it was like my mom or like my sister or my girlfriend, I would do it. But if it was like not a random person, but like somebody I knew in passing, I'd be like, fuck no. You know what I'm saying? No,
someone you know in passing.
Like an acquaintance.
But this is their kid.
No, I'm saying I would do it. You know, if that was my child or my mom or my girlfriend, I would do it. But if it was like not a stranger, but an acquaintance, like somebody you see at parties occasionally.
But why would I even be on the radar? Like, I feel
because maybe they went missing at the party, like Tamla Harshford.
I'd do it.
I would do that shit.
I do it.
You're not gonna lock me up for 25 years because I've happened to be.
But then, but I'd rather have to do the lie detector than be locked up in court. Because court, like the way the American legal system works, in my opinion, is whoever can tell the best story. If someone gets up and tells a better story about how I was outside when they were outside, mm-hmm. I can at least sit in jail for like 25 years.
You could.
So they're gonna say, well, Jay did cooperate, did do the lie detector test. And they can say it came out questionable, whatever. But at the end of the day, I would do it because I feel like they're just going to lock your ass up. They're going to be like, well, we know that Jay left at 11:55 and they left at 11:56. Jay got home, but Blank didn't. I'm not trying to hear all that. I'm not trying to sit up and hear all that. I'm not.
You said that's dead. I don't have nothing to do with that.
Absolutely not. And then random people are like, well, I do see Jade outside. Absolutely not.
I'd have to consult a lawyer.
No, I feel that. Definitely consult your lawyer. But I mean, I feel like if they told me to do, I probably would end up doing it.
But here's the thing. The wife did come out and she said some weird shit, right? She said, like, when, because obviously this was raising red flags. Like, they were searching high and low, far and wide, getting nowhere as far as where this little boy was. And basically, the wife, when they asked her, hey, you know, during press conferences or whatever, why is your husband not cooperating with the police? Why are you not cooperating with the police? What is going on? You know, y'all acting kind of strange. She said that the reason her husband had left was because the police were asking him, quote, inappropriate questions, basically asking him, did you have sex with your son that night? We know that you had sex with him and that you hit him over the head and that you took him out somewhere and that you buried his body. These are the type of things that this is from the horse's mouth. Okay. This is what his adoptive mom said that they were asking her husband. And I feel like she probably spilled the beans and it's like, sis, you the one who said that. You probably should have never said that shit. But that's not something that people pull out of thin air. They didn't pull that out of thin air. What? And the police have never confirmed or denied that they asked him this. But why would she make that up? Because that makes him look bad.
But how? Okay, I'm still on.
What?
How the hell is he walking around today with that even said? It's like, do we?
What? Where's the proof?
But I feel like it's like, do we even care about our kids in this country? I'm sorry. Like, people are really, where's the proof? Find it.
There's like, no proof. I mean, it is questionable.
We're lucky we don't live in Jade Country, because I'm gonna tell you at the end, but I'm serious. Like, it's too much. It's too much.
Yeah, there's no proof that he did that. Like, he says where he was at the time. He says that, you know, he was with Jalique at his parents' house, but there also is cell phone towers that put him about 30 miles outside of where he said he was that night. So when things started coming out and it started getting a little more suspicious, they subpoenaed his cell phone records, and his cell phone records don't even match up with his story. So his story is very flighty. His story is very weird. Nothing's adding up. But it's one of those things where, like, they don't have a body, they don't have any proof, they don't have any witnesses. So what do they say? Like, oh, you said you were here and you were really there. All he's going to say is, oh, I remembered it wrong. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's not any hardcore. It's all kind of circumstantial evidence, which is really hard to convict somebody else. He was never convicted of anything. I will just throw it out there. He was never convicted of anything, but he was named as a person of interest in the disappearance of his son. Mm-hmm. But he was never convicted. Mm-hmm. He was just kind of named, and everybody just kind of, you know, low whispers saying, I think this nigga did that shit. But he was never convicted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that. So I guess what I'll say is, I'll wrap it up, because we're almost at an hour. I'll wrap it up with, Jalique was never found.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody was ever convicted.
I know why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're still looking for him. Like I said, he disappeared in 2007. It's 2021. That wasn't that long ago. This is not like a case from the 70s or something like that. And, you know, that's kind of everything that is. Like, his parents kind of have been pushing the idea that he was, that he ran away because he wasn't happy, or he kind of, like, they may think they've committed suicide because he had suicidal tendencies. But forgot one thing. His grandma apparently was, his maternal grandmother was charged with burglary because she decided to go to the house where his parents lived. And they basically said that he was last found wearing, like, you know, his last found clothes or whatever. Like, you know, when they said, oh, last seen wearing blue shorts, whatever, whatever. I can't think of what he was last seen wearing. It doesn't matter. But when she got in the house, she found, like, a sweatshirt in the house that the dad had said that he was last wearing when he went missing. So, if I'm going to play devil's advocate, I can't even, because I don't see how, if your child is missing, you're going to search high and low in every corner, yeah, every closet. And this house had, Jay, this house had two rooms.
Yeah, I know.
Not two bedrooms, just two rooms. So, like, a kitchen and a bedroom.
No.
And they had, like, curtains up and stuff like that in there. So, where would the shit get lost at? There was only two rooms in the whole house. It was a fucking shack. So, if the sweatshirt was in there, you probably would have seen the sweatshirt. Like, it's not like, oh, this is a 6-bedroom, 7-bathroom house. It just got lost in a corner. The house is the size of a damn a shack.
No. Okay.
Where are you gonna... Yeah, so no. They found his... She found his sweatshirt. And only thing that came with that was because she wasn't supposed to be in the house, was that she got charged with burglary because she wasn't supposed to be in the house. But that's a little tidbit.
What's her name? The grandma?
I don't know the grandma's name. Don't matter.
Free grandma.
But it's the maternal. I don't think she ever went to prison. But she's caught a little charge. But that was his maternal grandma. And she just kind of, I guess, was like, yeah, I don't really understand this. But because she went about it in, like, an illegal way, she just kind of caught a charge. As opposed to it being like, oh, this is good evidence. Because you can't just go on people's
houses. Yeah, you can't. Yeah.
You can't do that.
So a lot of feels.
Okay.
The dad killed him, period.
What about the mom, though? You think she knows?
Oh, okay. So this is... Okay, you want to hear my whole theory?
Yeah.
The theory I've conjured up. This is my theory, right? So my theory is that basically they tried to give him up for adoption. It didn't work. Mm-hmm. They got him... So first of all, my theory is they adopted him for a reason. Either the dad's a pedo, or they thought that there was some loophole to get money, or some type of publicity. They thought they could get something out of having this child, right? Having this black, biracial child, like, in their household. They thought there was something for them. Mm-hmm. Quickly, when, like I said, the dad was a pedo and realized that, oh, I'm not attracted to boys who have hit puberty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when he hit 11, 12, whatever sixth graders are, he had no more use for him. At the point where he had more use, he became a nuisance to this family. Mm-hmm. That is when they tried to give him up. And then once they basically, and they were abusing him. So to be like, oh, he has behavioral issues. You're abusing the child, this little boy.
Yeah.
Of course he has behavioral issues. You done fucked him up. So at this point, when he no longer served their need, whatever it was, they decided, oh, we're going to try to get rid of him. Tried to give him back to adoption system. They said, nah, you can't do that shit. You adopted him. At this point, they decided to kill him. And that's really what I think happened. The whole, like I said, it's so fucking suspect. You took this little boy to a house. And I feel like parents really have, like, my mom used to always joke, like, she has eyes in the back of her head. Because deadass, I feel like even I get a pet, I only hear my cat walking around at 3 a.m. in the morning. Mm-hmm. It just wakes me up. So to think you didn't hear a little boy fumbling and trying to unlocking the door. Like, I feel like when you are aware you have a precious thing in your house, mm-hmm. you're gonna sleep lightly and hear the doors unlocking if he did escape or something like mm-hmm. that. And the whole thing, like, when the dad is like, oh, I woke up and heard something, went back to sleep. I believe that is when he probably killed him. Is during that time, buried the body, and then the hour between calling it is washing off blood and shit like that, in my opinion, is the hour in which he then decided to call the police, or probably even called his wife and told his wife he had done it, is now hiding the clothes, arranging the whole scene, right? Yeah. When the just police come to the house. Yeah. Too. And then that is when he called the police. And my whole thing is like, so again, so I really think they killed him. My other thing of why I think this little boy didn't run away is because who picked him up? My whole thing is like, if a little kid runs away, there's still a little kid. He's going to be walking on the side of the road. And they're in this small ass town. I feel like someone will be like, isn't that the blah, blah, blah's kid? Hey, kid, you need some help? Like, even around here, I'm saying nosy ass public keys want some help. And then if you're going to, I feel like people are going to say, well, maybe a sex trafficker got him. Maybe he got taken, right? If they were really looking for him the way he, and this is a bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. It does happen, though. But because, like, I looked up his pictures, he's a unique-looking little boy.
Yeah.
And if you had put him into sex trafficking or something, the minute that his picture went out, it sounds so bad, but they would have killed him or shipped him or something. Because he's so unique-looking that he would have been found. If someone saw this little boy in a car, in a store, he's so unique-looking that somebody would have called and reported they saw this missing child. Yeah. So to never find the bones, never find anything, I'm sorry. It just isn't it. I'm sorry. Like, I don't think that he was...
He is unique-looking.
But I'm saying, I don't think he was alive after that day. Because he would have walked... I'm serious. Like, the more true crime I listen to, I feel like I'm so passionate about this when it comes to children. Mm. But I feel like if he really walked out the house, somebody would remember him on the side of the road. Like, as an adult, if I saw a news thing today and I was driving on a road, I see a little girl, I would literally call. Because I'd be like, I remember a little girl with pigtails. So to say that no adult called for a child, and he, like, come on. Mm. Come on. There's no way. There's no way. There's no way he was legit ever missing. I'm sorry. They killed him. I'm sorry. There was no way. It doesn't make any sense. There's no way.
He is. Because just for context, he's this little, you know, light skin. He's biracial.
With like blonde hair.
Blonde hair. Real bright eyes. He looked kind of like this big blonde kind of like curly hair.
It doesn't make any sense. Afro, it doesn't make any sense.
You will remember
him. You would literally remember him. And like I said, I don't know who, unless you have a heart of stone, if you saw his face, you would call. Mm-hmm. You would literally call. Like, I remember a few months ago, like, someone who we had, like, an acquaintance of ours, it was, like, last year, had gone missing. And literally every person I saw that even I thought looked like him, I was literally on the hotline.
That was
like, I think I saw this person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you have to be heartless to not call for a child. Like, somebody would have called and said, and the fact that there's no nothing. Like, a lot of times when it is a kid ran away, and maybe they did get picked up. Mm-hmm. There are people who was like, oh, well, actually, the day before, whatever, I do remember seeing this little girl with brown hair who was like 4 feet tall. People really do call. Like, there's no nothing.
No.
They killed him. I'm sorry. They killed him. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I mean, well, I will just throw this out there. There was a
serial killer on the loose?
No.
They always
just
try that
a
shit.
Note that was sent that basically was like, oh, this was no, it was nonsense though. It was nothing. Not it was nothing, but it wasn't real, I don't think. And if it was, I think it was probably sent by the people who actually killed him.
Mm-hmm.
But the note basically said, it said, Jalik still alive, needed a foot soldier for this war on drugs, which I don't know if I mentioned this or not, but his parents had entertained the idea or gave, I guess, life to the idea that he ran away to join a gang, which is like, it's giving racism. Because why the fuck would he join a gang? He's like a foster kid who's been homeschooled his whole life. What are you talking about? Y'all live in West Bubble Fuck, New York. What gang?
And we never, I'm sorry.
And that was never a
thing
before.
And we never saw him again. Like, I'm really, really sorry.
Right. So,
like, we never, ever, ever saw him again. I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Like, is he in an underground gang? Literally under the crust?
He's
like,
a tether.
Yeah, like, no, no, no. Yeah, it's giving racism.
All right, let me finish the note, right?
Sorry.
So, Jalik's still alive. Needed a foot soldier for this war on drugs. Picked him up Route 40 post 30. Don't know what that means.
No! Sorry.
He's okay. No fake. He says, ask his mama and papa, who are the macaroni family, my cat named Diamond. Why does Francie yell fire? Don't try to look. We're not there.
No. They killed him.
Just nonsense. No.
They got someone to write this fucked up letter. Again, life is not a movie. Mm-hmm. For anybody who's still young enough to believe it, life is not a movie. Mm-hmm. They saw that note shit in a movie somewhere and wrote that. Cat named macaroni.
Apparently thing? He did have one.
Have what?
A cat named Macaroni.
Who had a cat named Macaroni?
Jalik. So that gives me, you knew, whoever wrote this knew him.
That says get the police off my back to me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That is a foot...
Because I'm like, whoever first of all, knew his cat and his cat named Macaroni.
A foot soldier on the war on drugs. A black person would never say that, period.
We would never say that. That's giving blacks rule. It is. That's spray painted.
No, that blacks rule. That literally is giving blacks rule.
I'm like, no black person's gonna write ever. Blacks rule, but
no, that's really giving that. It's the black rules for me. But no, I'm sorry. You tried and you failed. No, so
nobody's been arrested, Jay. Okay, everybody's cool. Still free and clear.
So let's work on it, y'all. So in my couple minutes of Googling, so I did find a petition. Mm-hmm. For Jalik. My only thing is it only has like 800 signatures. So I don't know if this is the official like change.org like actual petition. So I don't know if we want to find a better one to put in the episode link. Because this has got me fired up and pissed off.
You pissed?
I'm actually pissed off. I'm pissed off that this man gets to walk.
Yeah, the system failed him.
This is Jalik. Absolutely. And yeah. And that's the problem too that I think is that makes me so upset. Is because he was adopted. And I don't know if like he ever knew who his parents were. Or
he had two brothers, like biological brothers from his biological mother that he met. That I found that out, but I wasn't able to see anything that he ever met his biological parents. But he did meet his biological brothers.
Yeah, like it sucks. I feel like if his brothers came from the same situation as him, they may not be in a situation where they really have the time or whatever to really fight for him. Mm-hmm. But I feel like a lot of times in these cases, a mother or somebody ends up taking on the burden of fighting for their child. And I feel like he might not have the family like that. Mm-hmm. So I feel like just seeing that it only has 842 signatures, I feel like whoever started this petition literally is a person who this really tugged on their heartstrings. Mm-hmm. They decided to start it. And this is like depressing as fuck. Like, like you said, the system really has failed this young man.
And quick sidebar, in his note, in his like, kind of runaway note quote, it did say like something about Albany, and apparently his brothers, like his biological brothers, were from the area of Albany. So I don't know, just throwing that out there. That's just a little side note tidbit, but I don't think that note was for that reason. So I don't even, not I don't care, but I don't think that if he did write the note, I don't think it was a runaway note. I do believe, like, you know, other people saying that, oh, he got in trouble in school and his homework assignment was to maybe write this note or something like that. I don't think he ran away at all, period. But so if he says Albany or this or that, even if he did write it, I feel like it was someone forcing him to write it or someone who wrote it for him, who knew him personally, to say, oh, his brother lives there. Let me throw this in as like a little
an adult thing.
Yeah, an adult. Yeah, I don't think he wrote that. And even if he did, I don't think he wrote it of his own free will. I don't think he ran away.
I'm sorry. Like I said, like, The only reason I'm so passionate about it is because I know for a fact he didn't run away, because nobody ever saw him. Even if he ran away to Albany, and at this point he'd be like 26 or 25, depending on what his birthday was, people would recognize him. Like, he was such a unique looking kid. Like, even if I literally drive out of here today, I'd be like, oh shit. Like, after doing this podcast, that's literally him.
Yeah.
Like, people would have found him by now. He's not walking the earth. And normally, a lot of these missing kids cases, when the kid does, like, as sad as it is, I feel like a week later, whoever is their capture or whatever, like I said, when the missing posters go up, they do unfortunately normally kill the kid and they don't end up giving the kid back. They just try to hide the body.
Yeah.
But in this case, the fact that there's no one who ever saw him after that day, it makes no sense. Because even with the case of Alyssa Rudd, when she went missing,
there was a security camera.
You can find her after the day. And like I said, a week later, by then,
he was there. He,
yeah, exactly. And all this shit had happened. And then basically she was, you know, like, basically you could allude that she had been killed by him.
Yeah.
But with this, there's no cameras. He never walked in a 7-Eleven. He never, there's even, like, cameras on some highways. Like, he never was walking the highways. It just doesn't, like, you're trying to tell me the minute he left that house, a gang picked him up.
He disappeared.
And as a gang member, he never went outside. They just, like.
That's what they said,
Jay. It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it's sad. And like I said, I feel like, I just feel like the system failed him. Like the foster
absolutely.
Care system is.
Absolutely. And it's failed a ton of children in this country. Mm-hmm. And don't get me started on this country. But I feel like people know this, but I feel like in America, we place capitalism and a dollar over everything.
Everything.
And people who, how do I say it? The people who capitalism, what's the word? Like, benefits them, they will always, and they have the power, and they will always bark down and say that our dollars should not be used for the foster system or for the school system. And I feel like because they have so much power, they always bark it down, and then the politicians listen to them. But we have, like, become a country where, like, I don't think we ever did, but we really don't care about, like, the humans. Like, it's capitalism. We're in late stage capitalism. It's all about the profit and just churning that wheel. And, like, we don't even give a damn. Like, in all the political debates you watch, like, nobody talks about this. And there's even the other Netflix documentary about, I can't remember the guy's name, and I feel so bad. But it was, like, a little kid who was, like, in the same situation. Like, people had called on him.
He
had
died?
Yes.
Yes.
And when his body was brought to the hospital, he had all types of lacerations on him. All types of shit had been done to this little boy. And it wasn't even caught, so he was dead. Like.
Yeah, that one was bad, like, because
they had abused
it was
him.
The trials of Gabriel Fernandez.
Yes,
that one. Yeah, that was terrible.
The system
they had basically
failed him.
Like tortured him.
Yes,
to death. And I watched that. I asked Ivy to watch it with me, and she was like, "I can't watch that."
No, I couldn't watch it. I had to stop. I couldn't watch it. It's
but that was, I think, the first time where a social worker or somebody had ever been tried in like a negligence case, because it was just to the point where it's like you're a social worker or you're a child care worker, and you saw this happening, and basically you're a mandated reporter, right? If you don't report this stuff, you can go to jail. And I'm sure there have been instances, and they proved there had been instances before that where they noticed things or whatever, but because he died in such a horrific way, they basically had no choice but to try these social workers for a crime, like for negligence, or I don't know what they tried them with, but basically like negligence or something like that. Third degree manslaughter, you know, something chill, but you know, they caught a charge because this boy went through they tortured him to death, and this was going on for years, and it was kept happening, kept popping up.
I think in school, like, he had got like twice teachers had written stuff about him, having like bruises on him. Again, nothing was done. He wasn't removed from the home.
They said he came to school with his hair missing, beat the fuck up, all types of crazy stuff, and it just was horrific. So yeah, the child care system is, I mean the foster care system, it's bad, because like I feel I used to work in like a a child serving organization, right? And I used to go not hang out but I used to meet the foster kids and stuff like that, or whatever, and the kids in the special needs homes or the behavioral issues homes and things like that. And sometimes I'll feel bad because it's like their behavior wasn't normal, bruh. Like, it's like the kids would meet you once and they would get so attached, and I think that's because they don't have anybody. It's sad, like they really have nobody. So whenever somebody shows
really
them
sad.
Some attention, it's just like, oh, you gonna come back? And it's like, I mean, yeah, but like, cause it's my job.
Yeah, that's like,
I mean, it's sad.
That really, really does suck. I feel like we don't. I feel like that's not just even like a United States problem. I feel like it's a worldwide problem. People, I feel like it's like, I know it's a huge problem in Japan, but I feel like it's a lot of people have a hard time. I don't know. Like, I feel like when I obviously hear stories like this, my heartstrings get tugged. But I feel like a lot of times people, like, don't have an emotional attachment to family that's not them. So when there are kids who are undergoing the foster system, a lot of people, they don't feel that same attachment to the children.
But why adopt children if you're not going to feel the same attachment? I don't get that.
Because people think it's going to, like, feel, I don't know, I think this, I honestly don't know, because I've never done it. But I think that, I don't know, I think that people have this, like, pipe dream, they're going to adopt children, and the adopted child isn't going to be a regular child. Because all children have problems. And even if you birth a child with disciplinary problems or mental illness problems, I feel like people can accept that that is what, like, God or the universe has given them. But when they adopt a kid, they feel different about it. And that's not the situation with these people. Because these people, some of they had a motive and they were on some real fucked up shit. Mm-hmm. But I feel like a lot of people, when they get their adopted kid and they're not perfect and smiles and shit like that, they're upset.
Because I feel like some people, like, in this case, they have, like, a savior complex, right? So, when they feel like, oh, I'm this savior, I'm going to adopt this child, or especially when white people come
They
adopt foreign children, brown children, black children, low-income children, they feel like, oh, you need to give them a pat on the back, oh, I'm this savior, oh, I'm such a good person, right? And when the child is not behaving the way they want them to, like you said, they have... And this Angelique was actually diagnosed with kind of like attachment disorder, which makes sense because he was bounced around from house to house to house. But when they get that real shit, like, right in their face, they're like, what you mean? Like, you're not kissing my feet from rescuing you from foster care? And it's like, no, this is a child. They're not going to just be perfect because you got them out of foster care. They don't compute that. And they probably have mental illness. They have attachment issues. He has a lot of stuff going on. So for you to feel like, oh, well, I got him out of foster care and he's still being bad. What the fuck is wrong with him? I'm sending him back. I did him a favor. I feel like it's that kind of attitude.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, if you're going to have that attitude, then just don't adopt.
She's never done it. People in their kids should kiss their feet because they adopt them. But kids, all kids deserve a parent. So it's kind of like, the kid's not like, I don't owe you a favor. Like...
But I will say, people do that with their regular kids, too. Regular is a bad word. Their biological kids should kiss their feet because they raised them. And it's like, Miss Ma'am, ain't nobody asked you to do that. This is the United States of America. You could have got that suck if you ain't want to have no kids. Or you could have fucking put them up for adoption. You ain't have to have kids. So nobody's children have to fucking bow down to them or do everything they want them to do just because you raised them. But I feel like people do that with their biological kids, and it's probably even more prominent with, like, foster kids or adopted kids, because they feel like, probably feel like I did you a favor. And it's like, if you felt like you was doing me a favor, you should have just left it alone. Yeah. And that's that. That's how I feel about it.
I think this whole story is, like, a whole... Like I said, it's really unfortunate. I think it's really going to stick with me, and I actually do feel, like, so uncomfortable sitting here, because that... No, it just made me feel so uncomfortable. Like, I feel like it's so sad. Mm-hmm. It really shines a light on the issues we have in the United States, mm-hmm. and how, like I said, like, people really neglected this boy. The fact that a couple checkups a year could have probably really helped this kid, mm-hmm. and now I feel like he really is, like, dead. Like, I hate to be, like, such a pessimist, but, like, I'm sorry. Like, all signs lead to, like, his dad killed him for me. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's that. I'll post the, sorry to be a downer on your birthday, Jade.
No, I actually feel, like, inflamed. Like, I feel like I need to just go, trust me, I feel like I'm gonna go do something now. Like, I feel like
I'm like you're digging on the internet right now.
Oh, I am. Oh, sorry.
Jay's right across from me, like,
no, because we're about to get shit moving. Okay, I'm gonna write someone's congressman.
Oh, no, this is foul.
No, I'm really about to write somebody's congresswoman, man, whoever. Someone's gonna hear from me.
Yeah, it's bad. It's foul. Well, to wrap this up, we're still looking for Jalique. Like Jade said, there are petitions and things like that. I'll post the petition links in the description. But at this point, in 2021, Jalique is still missing.
And he would be like, what, 26?
Yeah, because he was... Yeah, no, about almost 26, because he was born in 1995. So, about 26. And he went missing when he was about 13. So it's been a long time, and, you know, if you think you see him or you know anything related to the case, reach out, or, like I said, I'll link the petition, donate to the petition if you can. But yes, it's really kind of sad. I hate stories like this. I picked this because, I don't know, I felt like it was good and it was kind of like off the grid. Like, a lot of people hadn't heard about it before. Mm-hmm. But I hate things like this where it's unresolved. It makes me sad.
I mean, I will say, like, unfortunately, like, it is, like, interesting. Because, like, with all unsolved mysteries, you can, you know, you get to kind of piece it together yourself. And mm-hmm. that is, I guess, entertainment. Mm-hmm. But I do think, like you said, it makes, like, I feel so unsettled right now. Because mm-hmm. it just, like, the anger boiling in me. Mm-hmm. That I feel like his father does get to walk the streets. And I get that, like, it's unjust to just convict people without evidence. But I just feel like when it comes to children, I don't know. I don't know. Like,
also, I gotta answer for this shit.
Like, I feel like there should be evidence and stuff. But at the same time, I just feel like if you read between the lines.
You just feel like children shouldn't be able to disappear off the earth.
And nobody is held accountable. But okay, so that describes exactly how I feel. I don't think that it should be cool that we have a kid who we can basically, we have evidence he's been sexually abused, physically abused, neglected, and now he's been missing for like 13 years. And we literally just sit in our homes and be like, well, he went missing. Like that, I mean, and again, like I said, if you don't answer for it here, and if you are the murderer, all right, shout out to Jared, Jeffrey, whatever the fuck his name was.
Steven.
But I'm just saying, like, whatever, and I feel like everybody can take this, whatever you don't answer for here on earth, you answer for the next life. Whether you're a Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, or you just believe in like energies, we all answer for everything. Everything. And like I said, even if you're not in a religion, I firmly believe that anything, everything comes back like a boomerang. Everything does. It life is a boomerang. If you didn't get it today, you won't get it tomorrow. Period.
I'm like, what's done in the dark gonna come to light, baby. Even if that light ain't here on this earth, that
always it's always coming back. The energy, like I said, all of us as not to get all metaphysical, but all of us as humans give off energy, and even if your body departs, your energy is still with us. And you're gonna get it. If you get it back 9,000 years from now, you're gonna get that shit. It's gonna come right back swinging at you.
It's true.
Remember that.
You can't be out here being foul with no consequences.
Absolutely not. There's consequences for everything. Nobody. I firmly believe that nobody gets away with anything.
Yep.
Firmly believe it. Firmly.
It's true. Well, there's that. I hope y'all liked the episode.
Yeah, me too.
And sign Jalik's petition. I'll link it.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, so this has been Cognac Conspiracies. Y'all wish Jada happy birthday. It's her birthday.
Yeah.
We're about to go eat some dinner.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, we're cognacconspiracies@gmail.com. Cognac Conspiracies on Instagram. And... you know, we will see y'all next week. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Send your comments, and we'll see you later.
Bye, guys.
Bye.